starting the top of Hayin Amud Aleph. So this is a derivative of the discussion we've been having, which is Rabbi Yochanan's position with regards to Kodesh. And Rabbi Yochanan, when it comes to Kodesh, says that you need two things. You need two items in order to be able to maxish something. One is you need to own it. And the other thing is that you need control, possession of the item, actually, to make it Kodesh. If you're lacking on either side of that, if you're lacking either control, possession, or you're lacking ownership, both of those will, each one of those independently will prevent you from being able to be makdish something. So based on that, you have this position of the Naradai. Imrei Naradai, lo kadvin in urkata amitalkele, that we don't write a harsha on mitalkele. Now, mitalkele here are, we have to discuss exactly what are these mitalkele here, but these are movable objects, right, non-real property, that are somewhere else. Now, what does it mean that they're somewhere else? The way Tosfos explains them, that we're definitely, it says, Dafka metalkalim d'gzelo, that we're talking about metalkalim that were stolen from you. You have objects that were stolen from you, right? And then you want to write this urkata on it. Rashi seems to be, just from the end of the Rashi, that it's still even talking about a case where you're maski, that you placed your item with someone else, that you gave it over to someone else, and someone else is watching the item for you. Tosfos rejects that because he says if it's placed with someone else, then you still have the ability to be makdish. You still have enough control to be considered the owner and in possession and control of it, and you can be makdish, so that wouldn't prevent you over here. Now this berkat over here is that you basically sign over the rights to a third party to go ahead and litigate on your behalf for these objects. So sure, you basically put them in enough control that they can litigate on your behalf. The problem over here is that you're trying to give possession of an item that you own, but is not in your control or possession, to a third party. So this is the equivalent of being what Rabbi Yochanan would call being makdish, something that you own but is not in your control or possession. So here you're trying to write over this property that's with the ganuf over to this third party in order that they can go and litigate with the ganuf. Zamar Ravashi Lameimar, my time, what's the reasoning of the Naradai? Amalei Mishum to Rabbi Yochanan. Based on the position of Rabbi Yochanan, Zamar Rabbi Yochanan Gazal Vilno Nitzia Ashu Haba'alim, a case where this gezel without yeush haba'alim, so there's no kinyan. Ayidei, the gazlan has no kinyan here because he's lacking yeush. Even though he might have shinei rishus, he does not have yeush. Shnehem einam yocholim makdish. Both of them are unable to be makdish the object. Zeli pisheinu shelo, this one because it doesn't belong to him, meaning the gazlan doesn't own it. Zeli pisheinu bishuto, and the owner, because it's not in his control or in his possession. And same thing over here, when he's trying to write this Arsha, he also, it's the property is with the ganav, so he owns it, but he's not in control of it. If he owns it, he's not in control of it, he can't give over, right, the right to litigate on his behalf to a third party. See, get down, right? There are others that say that this is what the Naradai says. Imre Naradai, lo kadvina rukata matalkale de kafre. There's not a general principle that you can't write over ownership or give over ownership or litigation control to a third party. The only time you can't do it is if there's a denial by the other party. For instance, when you have a case that the owner was maskeed the object with a neman, let's call him, the believed party, the trusted party that he gave it over to watch for him. Then he goes and says, can you please give me back my object? And the trusted party says to him, I don't have it, you never gave it to me, or make some sort of denial, which suggests that the property is not with this nifkad, is not with this ne'eman. In that case, we don't allow him to write this harsha. Why don't we let him write harsha? We don't allow him to pass over the legation rights to a third party. Time with the kafre, because he made the denial. Because of the denial, we don't let him do it, because the mechze kishikra. It looks like sheker. It looks like it's a lie. Why does it look like sheker? Why does it look like sheker? Because, right, the other party says that you don't own this object. So here we have a base and sign off on this litigation right to give over to a third party an object which the Naman or the Nefgad says doesn't exist, is not his, doesn't belong to this individual. So it looks like the base in one sense is siding with this individual, but also in the sense that they're giving over an object that is not clearly or in possession or belonging to the person who wants to give it over. Because of that, Mefze Kishikra, we don't allow him to do it. Avalo Kafre, if there's no denial over here, Kadvina. In that case, we would allow you to write over the property. Meaning that we're not associated for Rabbi Yochanan's position. Because who says that you need control in order to give it over an object? It might be true by hekdesh, right? In the case of hekdesh, it might be true because of the gzeras hakatuv, you require both ownership and control in order to be makdish an object. That's because it has to be beito, like beito, ma beito birshuto, right? Af kol davar birshuto. But that's not a general principle in kinyanim. That's a unique din by kodesh, by other principle, by other types of kinyanim. As long as you have ownership, that's enough of a enough of control. Even though it's not in your possession, but ownership is enough to pass on the kinyan. And so, therefore, here you can give a hershah even unto about an object that's not in your control or possession, but still in your ownership. Now, v'imrei neradai urkatav lo tibbe zil don zaki. So then you are sure, when you give litigation rights to a third party, right, that only works if you write in the harsha, zildon, go ahead and litigate, vizaki, and, you know, take possession or be zoche in the, va'apik v'nafshik, and take it for yourself. Otherwise it doesn't have any meaning. And if the only way to give over litigation rights to a third party is if that third party can then keep the object or take the object and succeed at litigating, and if he wins, it'll be his. Why? My time up. Mishom darmalei heyach. Because otherwise, the other party, the defendant in this case, will say la bavarim didia. He can always say you are not a party to this transaction because I stole from this other person, or quote unquote, meaning that the claim is that I stole from this other person, and therefore the litigation is between me and the person who I supposedly stole from. All of a sudden you show up in the picture, what right do you have to come and litigate with me? But if this Harshah, if this Urkata gives him the right to collect and keep it for himself, then he now becomes a party to the litigation. If he becomes a party to the litigation, then he can go and litigate against this defendant without him making the claim that you are lav bal dvarim didiyan. The Amar Abaye modifies this statement and says, v'yiktiv be the mechto l'shlish l'rviyah, that if it says that you'll keep a half, a third, or a quarter, meaning a contingency fee, basically a contingency fee for litigating on my behalf, you'll collect, you'll keep 50%, a third, you know, 33 or a quarter, 25% of it, then, migo de mishtoi dina apalko, mishtoi dina akulo. Then, since you have a right to litigate on the percentage that belongs to you, we give you a right to litigate on the entire amount. Because there's no way for you to get the percentage that you own without litigating on the entire package. Because until you get the entire package, you won't be entitled to your percentage. So therefore, giving you the right to litigate, we're giving you the right to litigate about the entire package in order to get the piece that belongs to you. Samar Meymar. Meir makes statements, itoflas lomafkinamine. If he grabs it, we don't take it away from him. So now, Rashi brings two interpretations about what itoflas lomafkinamine means. I said the first interpretation is, afagav loktiv be'apik lenafsheikh. Even though in the harshar, or the urkta, it doesn't say, apik lenafsheikh, take it for yourself, that you can keep the property for yourself, if he goes ahead and jumps the gun, and grabs the property away from the supposed defendant over here, right, from the Ganav, he takes the property back, we don't take it away from him. So even though the Urkata was not a valid document because it didn't give him the right to collect on his own behalf, and therefore he could have, the defendant here could have made a claim, lav bal dvarim didiyas, nevertheless, if he goes and jumps the gun and takes the property before there's any litigation, we don't take it out of him, we don't take it from him, we assume that he is a party to the transaction, despite the missing Lashon. Shona Farina, Rashi brings the second Lashon is, that if the person who the Arshah is written to, for instance, in a case where he gets 50%, 33%, or 25% of the value, if he goes ahead and grabs the whole thing and says, it's all mine now, we don't take it away from him. He says, this is what I saw in the Chuvat HaGeonim, is a Yikar. He says, that's the right shot here. Now what Amemar is suggesting over here is that when you write an Urkata that entitles this third party to go and litigate and then get a percentage of whatever the, or contingency fee, whatever the success or getting the object back, he'll keep a percentage of that object. If he goes ahead and grabs the whole object and then refuses to give the other percentage back to the real owner over here, we don't go and take it away from him. Okay, Ravashi, right. Ravashi Amar, Kevin, the Kat Pele, called the Mitzani Mindina, Kabbalit Alai, Shleach Shavya. Says, wait a minute, that's not the case. He didn't make him into an owner over here, Ravashi. The way Amimar is suggesting is that he made him into a full-fledged owner over here. And if he made him into a full-fledged owner, when he keeps it, we don't have a right to go and grab it away from him and give it back to the original owner, the original owner. Whereas Ravashi is suggesting that's not the case, because the way the Urkata, or the way the Tarshah is written, is that, called him Anamin Dina, everything that comes out of this din, Kabbalit Alai, right, I accept, or I say is okay. Therefore, he made him into a shliach. He makes him into a shliach. That means that whatever the shliach then succeeds at getting, he's doing it on behalf of the original owner. He's not acting on his own behalf, this third party. He's acting as a shliach, but a fully empowered shliach of the, right, the original owner.
So what's a meimar saying?
A meimar, oh, so that's what is a meimar saying? The ike, right. So we're going to
say the other
sections. Right, so that's it. Wait a second. Shutva Shabya. Right, that's it. The other person says, no, that he made him into a shutup. He's now a partner. He's not a shliach of the original owner, but rather he's now a partner, a joint owner along with the original owner. Why is that? They might have to mean, no? What's the difference here? The mitzvah palga to grab half of it. What does it mean, the mitzvah palga? So now, if he wants to mamon chibi im rotel akev chetzio, right, from the mamon that he grabs over here, if he wants to mamakev that half that belongs to him, he can hold on to the half because he's a shutup over here. Right, so if he's a shutup over here, we say, okay, we can't grab away, we can't take away from any of the money that belongs to him, because he is a 50% owner, right? A 30%, he's an owner of the property. On the other hand, if he's just a shliach, then really the original owner is zochah in everything, and then the original owner then has to pay out, right, to him the percentage that he's entitled to. So all the money went directly to the original owner, now he gets to pay him out a percentage. But then if he's a joint owner, if he's a partner here, then that money belongs to him immediately and he can hold on to it. He can grab that, he can be mitzvah, he can hold on to that money, and we can't take it back from him. That's his 50% that he owns of the object.
Well, the mitzvah's part is just simple and funny. It doesn't seem like he says to him, you know, if you can get half and keep it, if you get the whole thing, give me half. It sounds like he says, if you can get it back, then you can keep half for yourself. So, if he's half, you know, it's like a little tonight,
practically,
and it's
not pulling
the tonight.
Well, it depends how you view, that's exactly here, how you view his mission. If you view his mission as being a shliach, right, and ochanami, then they formulate the way you did, show, which is, you're a percentage of the whole. But that, if you make him into a shoot-up, that means that we now became 50-50 partners in this object, if we're 50-50, or whatever the percentage is, partners in this, then your ability to collect is as an owner, not as a shliach. And when you're zochah in the first 50%, you can go to me instead of to back to the original owner. It depends who you pay out on this in this situation. The only question, and this is what Tzvi was asking, is what's the position of a meimar? Position of a meimar here, and it seems to be that a meimar says, how good is this urkata here? This harshah that permits the person to go, the third party to act on your behalf, how big an actor is he? What is, and this is what we're seeing. We're seeing different levels of how this urkata works. So according to Rav Ashi, we have two possibilities about how this actor works. He's either a shliach, which means that he's the least. In that sense, he has the least ownership over the object. He's just acting as an agent on behalf of the original owner. Now, he has to be more than just simply an agent. He has to be a super agent, because otherwise the other person can say, you can say that you're not my party to the transaction. So he's some sort of super agent where he's not a the Gamre, he doesn't have a full kinyan over here, but nevertheless, he's better than a normal type of shliach. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is the second shita, or the second lishna in Ravashi, is that I am a shutup. I become a partner, which means that I have real ownership over here. I don't have ownership of the entire object, but I have ownership over a portion of the object. The last possibility is a meimar. A meimar says that the whole idea of our shah is that I step into the shoes of the original owner. I become like the original owner over here. Now true, I really should pay him some back, because the only reason he gave me the arshah is because he wanted to collect it back, but nevertheless, the arshah makes me now into the true owner, or the quote-unquote owner of this object. That's why I can go litigate, because I'm now made into the owner of the object. And it really is now in reverse. I own the object, and I pay you a percentage of the object, right? I'm the owner now, and I pay you out a percentage for giving me this harsha. I'm going to pay you a percentage of the amount. So it's just gradations of how this, when I permit, when I give someone an ipoy koach, right, I basically make them into my agent, but an agent in the sense that I'm giving them, right, signing over authority to act on that behalf, power of attorney. What does it mean that they have power of attorney? Are they now the true owner of the object? They're acting as my shaliach still, or something in between where we become partners here. And those are the three shitas we saw. We saw Meimar and the two lishnot, and the two lishanot in Rav Ashi. Alright, next Mishnah. Next Mishnah is a series of Mishnayot over here. A series of Mishnayot that discuss different possibilities of whether they can have his chayav or his patur. This is the first of this set of Mishnayot, are all cases where he is chayav. The ganav is going to be chayav. Chayav arba v'chamisha. When are you chayav arba v'chamisha? It's when you're toveach o mocher. The ganav that steals and then either shechts it or sells it. It'll be chayav 4 or 5. All the cases here in the Mishnah is going to say he's chayav, but they're setting up for the cases where he's going to be patur. So the next Mishnah will give us the other possibilities of where he won't be chayav. Now ganav al pishnayim. He stole with two witnesses. And the same witnesses saw him toveach the shechtes or mocheret or two other witnesses saw him do the tavicha or mechira. In that case, he pays 4 or 5 times. We will discuss why we have mentioned this. Seems obvious that that should work because there's an opinion, which we'll see in a minute, of Rabbi Akiva that suggests that maybe in this case he would not be chayav. Right now, next case, ganav umachar b'shabbat. Okay, he stole and then he sold it on Shabbat. Right, in the case where he stole it and he sold it on Shabbat, then he's going to be chayav arba b'chamisha. Why? Because he didn't do anything on Shabbat that he's chayav mitzvah for. As on the other hand, what's the possibility is that which is left out of the Mishnah here, which we're going to see in the next Mishnah, is the case of tavach. If he's toveach it on Shabbat, then he is chayav mitzvah for killing on Shabbos, for shechting on Shabbos, and never be kimlei to the rabbi mine. Right, the more stringent punishment, or you have the punishment, the death penalty over here, and that death penalty will prevent you, right, from being have to or having to pay in this instance. Right, ganav umachar avodah zarah. Again, if he steals it and then sells it to avodah zarah, again he'll be chayav arba v'chamisha, as opposed to if he steals it and then shechts it avodah zarah, which again will be a chiyuv mitzvah. Here he steals it and he shechts it on Yom Kippur. Then you still chayav arba v'chamisha. Why? Because Yom Kippur, the Easter of Yom Kippur is only a Easter karet. And it says an Easter karet does not prevent you from having to pay. There's no necessarily, not necessarily, a kimla d'rabbi minei when it comes to a chiyuv karet. Ganav mishel aviv. He stole from his father. V'tavach u'machar. And then he shechted it or sold it. V'achar kach mit aviv. And then his father dies, he still has to pay arba v'chamisha. So even though now he's going to inherit this item, nevertheless, because his father died after the obligation came upon him to pay 4 or 5 times, he has to pay the 4 or 5 times beforehand.
He's going to inherit, well, I guess there are
depends if they're other brothers, yorshim. Right. If they're other yorshim, then he might lose out on that 4 or 5 times, right. Ganav v'tavach, if he stole it, and then he was toveach, and then he shechted it, v'achakach hikdish, and then he was makdishit after it was shechted. Again, the obligation devolved upon him to pay the 4 or 5 times before he was makdishit. So he did not push it out of his possession before he shechted it, and therefore he's going to be chayav 4 or 5 times. Ganav v'tavach l'rufu'ah. He stole it, and then he shechted it for medicinal purposes. Ole klavim, or he shechted it for the dogs. Ashokhez v'nimtzei treifa. If he shechts and he finds after he shechted it, it's a treifa. Shochet chulim ba'azara, or he shechted chulim ba'azara, shalem tashlumi arba v'chamisha. In all these cases, he pays 4 or 5 times, because he shechted, it's a valid shechita, since he shechted the animal, he's going to be chayav. B'shimon poter b'shnei elu. The last two cases, B'shimon is poter, B'shimon is l'shita to, throughout Shas, and a shechita she'inu ru'uya le'achiyala, and any shechita that is unable to be eaten, right, that failure to be able to eat it when you have shechita makes it into a invalid shechita. So in these last two cases, where he shechts it either chulin ba'azara, or he shechts it and it's a treifa, so shechita is not a shechita that allows you to eat it, that's an invalid shechita. If it's an invalid shechita, then he never shechted the animal. If he never shechted the animal, he's not going to be chayav arba chamisha. So So depending on Rav Shimon's opinion versus Chachamim, in those last two cases, you'll either be Chayav or Patur when he for Arba Chamisha, in that case of Shechita. That is why it says, Lema Masnitsin to Lok Rabbi Akiva. Let's say our Mishnah is not like the position of Rabbi Akiva, the Rabbi Akiva. If it's Rabbi Akiva, Amar Dabar, Velo Chatsi Dabar. When it comes to Adim testifying, Adim must testify to the entire case, to the entire, to a full statement, a full Chiyuv, and not half an item, the Tanya. I'm Rabbi Yossi Kishalach Abba Chalafta Itzel, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nori. Rabbi Yossi, who was talking about Abba Chalafta, Abba Chalafta is the father of Rabbi Yossi, says when Abba Chalafta went over to learn with Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri, the Motorab, even though the other way around, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri told Abba Chalafta, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri went to Abba Chalafta, Amarlo, Harei Shachloshon Arishon Abisnei Shnayim, Shnia Abisnei Shnayim, Shlishi Abisnei Shnayim, Mahu, is a din in Baba Basra, a din of Chazaka. In order to establish a Chazaka on a field, you have to be there for 3 years. So if you ate in a field for 3 years, then if you have a claim that I bought the field, you no longer have to show evidence of a shtar anymore. People only keep their documents, right? Their documents of evidence for 3 years. After 3 years, we assume that maybe the document's gone, but if he has a chazaka, his evidence that he ate there for 3 years, and it's a claim that he bought it, it becomes his. So how do you have evidence that he ate there for 3 years? It's three different sets of edim. One set of edim says he ate there the first year. Second set of edim says he ate there the second year. And then the third set of edim says that he ate there the third year. So on that we say, what? Mau, what's the din? Amalei harizu chazaka. So this is a chazaka. Amalei afani omer tein. So whoever it is, either Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri or Abba Chalafta, whoever's speaking in each of these cases, right? One of them said, I think it's a chazaka. And the other one says, I agree with you, I think it's a chazaka. Elish Rabbi Akiva chalek badavar. Rabbi Akiva disagreed to this. Sha'aya Rabbi Akiva omer davar, velo chazi davar. Over here, each set of edim did nothing. Each set of edim testifies unto a single year. They are not giving a testimony that has any meaning. The fact that you say, I ate there for a year, has no bearing on any halakhic outcome. Only together with the other two sets of edim do they have any bearing on the halakha. So according to Rabbi Akiva, that's not an edus. Edus is only when I can establish some sort of halakhic outcome by my testimony, then I am giving testimony. That's a good edus. If I'm only giving a portion of what's going to become a halakhic outcome, then that's called chatzi davar, and edim have to give to, right? It says, Ki yakum eid, right? When the edim come to testify, pishnayim edim yakum davar. They don't have to come. Davar, davar means that they have to create some sort of halakhic outcome. Sal, you want to add something?
No. I just how you define davar.
Right? Okay, very good. Right. Davar. Okay, so very good. That's what Rabbi says exactly what or Dai says that you have to look at different types of davar. Right? Halakhic outcomes can depend on. Right, different circumstances that you might be able to have a chatzi davar that it still has a halakhic outcome. And what's that? That's our case over here. Baramar Afilu Tame Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva giving me other Mishnah. Midlo Moda Rabbi Akiva Vishnaim Omrim Kidesh Ushnaim Omrim Baal. If two Adam come and say this woman got married, then two other witnesses come along and say Baal, that she now had an extramarital affair. So Afagav the Adei Bia Tzricha the Adei Dushim. The Adei Bia, the fact that they say that she had an extramarital affair. It's only an extra marital affair if there are two Adim that say she was married at some point. So the Adei Bia need the Adei Kedushim. On the other hand, given the Adei Kedushim lo tzricha the Adei Bia, the Adei Kedushim can stand independently. They're now making a halakha testimony. When they say this woman got married, that is a dabar, meaning that they're testifying, even though it has no implications in terms of, you know, her being put to death, it still has halakhic implications that she is married. So when they come to testify about the Kiddushin, they have Eidus that's independent of the Eidei Bia. So therefore, Davar Karinen Bey. In that case, even the Eidei Bia are considered to have a Davar. Since the only way we consider it to be a Chatzi Davar is where both sets of Eidim, right, have no halakhic implications without the other set. They are both dependent on each other. In a case where one set of Eidim could stand independent, then we don't consider that to be a Chatzi Davar. It's over here also. So how can I mean? I forgot the Eidei Tzvicha, Tzvicha the Eidei Gneivah. The Eidim that come and say that he shechted, they definitely require the Eidim to say that he stole it, because otherwise, what's the relevance of him shechting it? They said he shechted it. Okay, I shechted my own animal. What do you mean? What's the Eidim of Shechita has no bearing unless they have the Eidei Gneivah. But on the other hand, came the Eidei Gneivah, lo Tzvicha the Eidei Tzvicha, the Eidei Gneivah can stand independent. Why can the Eidei Gneivah stand independent? Because if he stole it, there's still a lot of implications to the fact that he stole it. Chayav Ketel then. Right? Even though he may not be Chayv Arba Chamisha. The Eidei Gneva can stand independent of the Eidei tvicha. Davar tvinim be, and therefore will be considered a davar. So this is a modification of Rabbi Akiva. And when we say that it has to be davar, not chatzi davar, that means that both sets of edim have to be testifying to something that is a chatzi davar. That both sets of edim cannot stand independently. If either one of the sets of edim stands independently, then it's no longer considered a chatzi davar, and every edim that all the sets of edim that testify here become as if they're speaking about a full davar. It doesn't have to be that each one of them has a lachic implication, but as long as one set of edim can stand independently in the case here, then it becomes davar for each set of edim.
So the edim who say that he stole, they stand independently.
Right.
Now the next set of edim would come along and says he shafted, it. After this stands, it doesn't matter. That doesn't stand?
It does stand. Yeah, that becomes davar.
Edim second.
The second set
of edim.
Yes.
Okay, they can build on each davar.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the first edim now, since it could have stood independently, then whatever is built on top of that.
That's a reality that's accepted by everyone. In the
exactly. So this is where Rabbi says, that's what he modifies the position of Rabbi Akiva to say, chatzi davar is only in a case where every set of edim needs the other set of edim. As long as nobody can stand independently. But as soon as you have one set that can stand independently, then everybody else is almost enjoined to that set, and then becomes a davar. Because now each set will have a halakhic implication over here. Now, how is this different? What you have to explain now is how is this different than the shanim over there? Why, when each edim come and testify about each shana, right, of the 3 years, is that different? Meaning that how is that different than the cases that we're talking about here? And then number two is that how is it different than what we're going to see in a second what the chamim are about to establish? Let's establish what the chamim say, and then let's go back and understand how that's different. Now the Gemara says, what do the Rabbanan hide davar and ochat davar the Yom say mai? What do they do with this davar? Right? If you say afish naim edim yekum davar, Rabbi Akiva says davar and ochat davar. What do the Chachamim consider a chatzid davar? If they say that shana rishona, shana shniyah, shana shlishit, and all these items that's not considered a chatzid davar, what do they consider a chatzid davar? So the Mutei echad omer achad begavav, achad omer achad bekrisa. So here we have Aiden that's coming to testify about a woman. Or even it could be in the same case, it could be equally so with the man. They come to testify that they are gadol. They come to testify about the fact that they have reached the age of puberty. To make them a gadolat, to be kibel onshim, right? Or say that they're kidusha, kidushin, that she's valid, the kidushim are valid kidushim because she's not a kano, she's a gadola. Right? How do you establish a gadola? You have to have shtei se'arot. So you have two veidim come to testify. One set says, echad omer b'gabah. One says that there was a hair on her back. There was hair on, right, something on her stomach, on the front side. So they say that, hai chatzi davar. Right, so that's considered chatzi davar. Gemara says, wait a minute, that's chatzi davar, that's chatzi edusu. Nobody ever they didn't testify to anything. What did they testify? They saw something on her back, saw something on her kvitsa. What is that? That's not even a chatzi davar, it's a chatzi edus. The edus is not about anything whole. They're not giving a testimony to any full item, to any full object.
How is it different than the guy who saw me for 1 year?
Oh.
1 year down the road.
All right, so very good. We're going to come back to that in a second. All right, exactly. Why is that different? El Mute Shnaim Omrim. No, it's a case where Shnaim Omrim. Right, so this case was what? You had one A testify about the hair in the back, one A testify about the hair in the front. So in that case, they said, that's not a Chatzi Davar, that's Chatzi Edus. Over here now, so let's ratify it and say what? That Shnayim Omrim Echad Begavav, Shnayim Omrim Echad Bekrisa. Two of them say there was one on the back, and two of them say there was one on the front. So over here now you have full Eidim, because you have two Eidim about each part of this. But nevertheless, right? Hani Amrei Ktanahi, Hani Amrei Ktanahi. Each one of them is testifying that she's a Ktanah. Because each one of them is saying she has a one hair and not two hairs. How do you make her into a Gola? She has to have two. So each one of them comes and testifies that there's one hair here, says that she's actually a Ktanah and not a Gola. True, when you put them together, it becomes a gola because you have each one says one hair, two, one and one is two. But each eidus on itself is saying she's a ktana. So therefore she remains a ktana. So Shaul's question is valid. How is this different than Shana Rishona Shnei Shlishit? In that case, all of them are saying independently, he just was there for 1 year. So why is that different than saying that she's a ktana over here? So Gadya says no. Right? And that's what Rashi and Tosfos over here come to explain. How is this different? So he says, if Rashi says over here, Rashi says it in an obviously Kedarka B'Kodesh, a concise way. Rashi says, Akatik Tanahi, Hilkach Lo Mitzarfina. Since therefore they're not Mitzaref, why are they not Mitzaref? Because each one independently is saying that she's a Ktana. Whereas by the Chazaka, while the Gabe Chazaka, Kulan Me'idim Shaya Mukhzafa. They're all coming to testify that he was Mukhzafa. They're not coming to testify that he was not Mustafa. When they come and testify to 1 year of his being there, they're not coming to say 1 year and not the other 2 years. They come to say 1 year, right? And, yeah, there's a possibility he was there for the other years, but they are, we weren't there. We don't have a testimony to that. But they're not coming to say one as opposed to three. They're coming to say one, which could be mistareif to three. As opposed to the other eight of them are coming and say only one, they're saying one as opposed to two. And if it's one as opposed to two, she's a tano, right? And it's not mistareif. That's the way Rashi learns it. Tosfos, on the other hand, says, because he gives two reasons, two possibilities. One, the hatam ro'ov kol mashi yecholim li'ot ba'oto shana. Says that by the aidance of the chazaka, they gave a full testimony as to that year. About that year, there's nothing else they could have said. I mean, they gave, about that year, they said everything that could have been said about that year. As opposed to Eidim, when they're coming to testify about the Se'arot, they could have seen the other item. They had the ability, at that moment in time when they testified, they could have seen both hairs. The fact is that they only saw one. So therefore, they are giving a chassid davar because there was more to the picture than they actually testified about. Suppose the other Eidim testified entirely about what they could have seen, which was that year that he was there. That's one possibility. So this brings the second one, the Shem Rav Alphus. It's interesting right there. Here, we've seen it a couple of times here in Tosfos in Bava Kamma that he quotes the Rif. Which is interesting over here, that he quotes the Rif again. Perish Mishom, the Hata Mahani Tazutayu. Venyan Peru Sha'achal B'shana Rishona, Shachayam B'shalim. Says that their Eidus does have implications over here. Why? Because if their Eidus will actually establish that he is now Chayav, right, to pay for the payroll that he ate if there that year. I mean, if there are no other Eidim that show up, then he has no chazaka here, and that means that he wasn't the owner of the field. That means that whatever he ate that year, he's now going to have to pay back, because these Eidim testified that he ate there that year. So they're actually obligating him to pay for the whatever he consumed in that year until the other Eidim come along and say that it was a chazaka.
That's not more like a testimony about one hair. They're testifying that she's a tana.
Right, but over here it actually has a positive meaning that he's obligating him to pay. That the it's an outcome of their testimony, right? It's an obligation, right? So it's, all right. So now Chol says v'tam rishon nirala riyika. He says that he thinks that the first interpretation is proper, and that he can bring down proofs in that from that perspective. But a little bit what Chol is saying over here. The fact that he's obligating him to eat for the payroll that he eats over here, that should have no implications about the chazaka, because those are two different issues, right? One issue is about thinking about the chazaka, and the other one looks a little bit like the hair, which is saying that you don't own it, you ate fruits, and then you're going to have to pay for the fruits. But the way the Rav Alphus really formulates it is not that that's a outcome of your testimony. They're not in the case for the hair, they're testifying that she's a ktanah because he only saw one hair. As opposed to over here, he's testifying that he was muktzah in it for that year. Right. Now the implications of that are.
There is a
lack of argument. I'm assuming that's what the Rif is saying. That even though they come to testify about the chazaka, there is an outcome or a halachic outcome or halachic implication that if we don't find the other Eidim, then he will have to pay for it. But they didn't come to testify that he ate that he has to pay. That's not what they come to testify about. But again, there's a weakness to that, and that's why they really like the first interpretation, which is that they testified to the entire of what they could have seen, the entirety of what they could have seen in that point time period. Alright, now, Mer continues. In the second case in our Mishnah, Ganav Umachar B'Shabbos. He sold it, and then he sold it on Shabbos. Bahatanya Patur. We have a Braisa that says he's Patur. Where it says, Amar Rabbi Bachama, Kitanya Haizen Patur. What's the case by Patur? Ba'omer Lo, Akut Te'ina Mete'inati. He says, listen, this other party shows up, right, and moving comes along and says, listen, you stole this item, I'd like to purchase it from you, you know how I'm going to purchase it from you, come over to my field and pick some figs. Pick some figs on Shabbos, and when you pick those figs, I'll take possession of the item, I'll take possession of the Gneva. So in that case, because he is now, when he picks the dates on the figs on Shabbos, which creates the transaction, he's going to be chayav for picking on Shabbos, right? Okay, staying on Shabbos. To be chayav misa. This is chayav misa. It's kimle zerabba minay. And even though so the transaction is generated by a chayav Shabbos, in that case it would be patur. So it says, Imri, v'kevan, v'chitavale, kaman, v'dina, lo aminan le zil shlim, v'chayav v'nafsho, who? Right? Oh, wait a minute. Why are we going to say to him over here, if you come and make a claim in the din, the buying party who's over here, who comes to buy the gneva, and he goes and picks the figs in order to generate the transaction, if he comes to court now And he says, listen, this guy picked some figs. I want what I bought from him. Right? He took my figs, and now from that transaction, I bought the stereo that he stole. Right? So they say, I'm giving you my stereo because he picked the figs. We go to Beis, and Beis is going to say, nothing doing. Why? The Mechayim Ben Afshov. These guys Chayim Nisa. These Chayim Nisa over here, it means that we don't address any monetary matters when it comes to Misa. If that's the case, Ha Mechira Nami La Mechira Hi. There is no transaction. I mean, if we can't go to court and enforce the transaction over here, as if there was no transaction. If there's no transaction over here, right, then what's the case that Rabbi Bracham is coming up where he's going to be Potter Mi Arba B'Chamisha? The case where you Potter Mi Arba B'Chamisha is the case where you actually did the Mechira, and you did the Mechira, but the Mechira somehow fails the test of, right, and somehow you come Chayav on Shabbos at the same moment that the Mechira takes place. And therefore, you'll be patur from Arba B'Chamisha. Over here, he's patur from Arba B'Chamisha because a mechira never took place at all. So that's not comparable to the case in the Mishnah. The case in the Mishnah is the case where I did mechira, and I'm chayav Arba B'Chamisha because I'm not chayav in Shabbos. So when you come and say patur, I want to talk about the case where he did a mechira, and yet he's patur from Arba B'Chamisha. Over here, there was never a mechira because the failure.
Why is there a mechira? Then in an armed robbery, a person shoots a guy and they sometimes to grab the wallet.
Right.
They say, no, he's not chayav in the
Tashlum over here, right? Because there's no Geneva. I mean, we don't say that there's a transaction. We're going to come up in a second. The Gemara's going to come up with a case.
No, but you say that the gun.
No, because here.
No,
because there, the wallet was taken in a separate action, a separate kinyan from the killing. Over here, it's the Chil of Shabbos that's generating the Mechira, the kinyan. So therefore, there's no kinyan, right? Right, the payment itself is the chilul Shabbos. The kinyan is generated through
that. Let's say a guy stole a guy's pacemaker by like grabbing it. So that in theory that he wouldn't be kona the
right. Okay, in theory, right. That if the action of killing was the stealing action, then true. That's a possibility that he wouldn't be chayv in that case.
Not chayv, but he wouldn't be kona.
Right, he has an kinyan on that object. Right, he doesn't take possession of that object. So over here, that's Rabbi Bar Chama's suggestion. Mara says, wait a minute, there's no mechira over here. Listen, you know what you'll do? Just take the thing that you stole. Whatever you stole, they stole some sort of something. He stole a baseball, he stole a bat, and he wants to throw it into my chaser. Throw it into my chaser. So when he throws it into his chaser, then it's going with the reshut. From reshut the rabbiim to reshut the yachid. So he throws it from reshut the rabbiim to reshut the yachid. At the time that it moves from Shudra Rebbehim to Shudra Yachid, also then when it lands in the Chaser, you're taking possession of it. Right? So the Chaser is Kone on my behalf, that which you threw, as well as, right, the fact that when you throw from Shudra Rebbehim to Shudra Yachid, I'm Chayav on Shabbos. Come on. Who does this have to be like? This has to be to Rabbi Akiva. By the Amar Kuta, Kamisha Hun Chodamya. Rabbi Akiva is the belief, this is a Machlokas in the Gemara Shabbos, when an object is thrown, right, how do we view the object? Do we view the object that is thrown to be in motion? Meaning that it's in motion and there are only two points on this motion line, which is Akira, the place that it left, and Hanaka, the place that it landed. As long as it's in motion, it's considered not to have done anything besides be in motion between the Akira and Hanaka. Rukiva believes, no, that every step along the way is discrete Akira and Hanaka. That every point along, when you describe motion, you're describing a series, an infinite series of points along the way. It's not that there's a line or some sort of continuum between the Akira and the Hanacha, but rather there is a discrete Akira and Hanacha at every moment along the throwing arc or the throwing that you do. So if that's the case, right, it's only work points are being given. Why? The Ikar Abonon, if you believe it's like Rabbanan, give the Machil Chaser Beitel Kana, the Inyan Shabbos. Lo Mechayiv at the Machil Ara. Because when are you kona the object? And in terms of gneiva, when are you kona the object? As soon as it enters into the walls of your chaser. As soon as it's below the height of the walls of your chaser, that's considered to be within the pure possession, within the confines of a chaser mishtemeret. And it's in the Gemara Ksubos, if you remember the Gemara Ksubos, where they throw the get. I mean, sorry, Gemara Gittimit. Throw the get, and he throws it off the roof into her chaser. And with the case where the walls of the chaser were higher than the roof, so as soon as it entered her chaser, it was already hers, meaning that it became hers right away. So that's the case. You see that as soon as it reaches within the wall space of the chaser, you're koneh. As opposed to Shabbos, if you need Shabbos, in order to be chayav, you need a hanacha, according to the Rabbanan, you need it to actually land. So what's going to happen? You're chayav on the gneivah way before you're chayav for Shabbos. If that's the case, then the chiyuv mamon came before the chiyuv mitza. In that case, you'll be chayav to return the gneva or pay for the gneva, right? Even though in the end you're chayav mitza because they're independent. You had a chiyuv mamon, and then later on you have a chiyuv mitza. These are two separate actions; they don't happen simultaneously.
So where's the difference being? There's a single action. It was a single action, but because the efficacy of it, the kinyan happens before the chil shabbos.
A maisa is not what we consider a maisa, being that action. A maisa is halacha. Right, impact. Halacha maisa. So here it only be if two that they are separated. The halacha impact is separated between the stealing and the shabbos. And the poster of Yekibo says puta misha unspadamya. That means as soon as it enters into the wall space of the chaser, as if there's anocha there. Once there's anocha, that's time. That means it's simultaneous. The chiyuv shabbos and the chiyuv mamon are simultaneous. If that's the case, then your chayav to shabbos is kimle drabim minei, and you won't have to pay. So according to Rabbi Akiva, in a case where he says to him, "I'll be konei when he's thrown into my chaser." So Omer, so he says, "Wait a minute. We could even according to the chachamim say that." So Omer, lo technically gnevutech tanuah. Your gneva, I only want to take possession of it when it lands. So if he does that, in a kinyan, you can determine when the kinyan happens. I mean, that you can redefine, even though technically if you just threw it without any definition, you would be coded as soon as it enters the wall space of your chaser. But if I simply say, I do not take possession of it until it lands in my chaser, then he's created a situation where the kinyan and the chil shabbos happen simultaneous, even according to, right, the chachamim. Right, so if he, so even according to Chachamim, we come up with a case.
According to
the
Akiva,
the conclusion
from
Mishnah Hamkadamia,
then simultaneous with the Chil Shabbos is the Gneva, and then you have the same.
The Kinyan is happening at
the same time.
Right, it's happening at the same time. All right, so that's it. Right, so very good. So now, let's see this. The Gemara Rava says, "Rava Amar the Olam Parami Bar Chama." This halacha is like Rami Bar Chama. Why? Etnan Astra Torah, right? The Etnan is something where a person takes the services of a zonah, right? And in exchange for the services, you pay her with a sheep or some sort of item, right? There, that item is not allowed to be given or brought on the mizbeach. Now, Etnan Astra Torah filu ba'alimo. Even in a case where the znus happens with his mother, right? Znus with his mother is arayot, he's chayav misa. If he has nuts with his mother. Nevertheless, the etnan, the payment that's given to his mother for the services provided by his mother, is still a sore in the mizbeach. V'itavalei kaman b'dina, if he brings his mother to din, or I'm sorry, the other way around, his mother brings him to din to get payment, mi'aminalei kum havla, etnan, would we say to him, go pay her? So again, the case is, his mother is the zonah. He says, I will give you, the person, this Boel, comes in and says, I will give you a sheep in exchange for the znus that we're performing over here. And we say, nevertheless, even though he's chayav misa now for having znus with his mother, still, if he pays her the sheep is still a sword to go on the mizbeach. But, if they went to Beis Din, right, what would happen? He says, listen, my mom owes, the mother goes to Beis Din and says, my son owes me this sheep. Beis Din says, no, nothing doing, because he's chayav misa over here. He doesn't have to pay anything, it's chayav misa. So Ella, so that shows you what? That the two are independent. Even when you're chayav misa, you can still have a kinyan that takes place. Even though we won't go to din, and even though you can't make a valid claim in din, there's still a kinyan. If the object actually transacts and moves, there is a kinyan over here.
Technical reason,
right.
It's unenforceable on
Beis Din. Right. Even though it's unenforceable, there's still a kinyan that took place. Ella avagav, the kikatov alei bedina, lo aminam zil havlo. Gave the chiyav law havi etnan hakanami. Afa gavlinian tashlumim etava medina kaman lo amina lezil shlim. Even though, despite the fact that if he actually went to din, we can't enforce it, we can't have him pay because he was mechalo Shabbos. Nevertheless, afil often gave it to kamakti levahochi avio mechira. Since he did create a kinyan, he said it was a kinyan, then he is koned. Even though it's not enforceable in Beis Din, there still is a din, there still is a possibility, right? Possibility that you would be koned, despite the fact that it's unenforceable in Beis Din.
The difference in the case where you throw it into the chaser may be that it's irrelevant to go. There's no relevance to the case of going to be today in Beis Din because he has the object already. It was thrown into his chassid.
I think what Shaul is saying is the answer to your question right before.
Well, what's your chassid adding here?
Right, how is Rebbe's case different than the case you said before?
Yeah.
Right, the case before is that, which is, and the case by Etan Zonah, and the case by the case of Teina. In both those cases, right, the only way, the object never really entered his possession. And the object is still with the original party.
Yeah.
And now, in order to get the object, he has to go and take it. Right, he has to go take the object. The only way he can do that is he has to go to Beit Din and say, listen, I have a claim against this object. I want to collect my object. That's to make it not. So since it's not enforceable in Beit Din, then also when he goes to the Kinyan, it didn't take place because the Kinyan is in a different place. But by a Chatzer, he never has to go to Beit Din to make his claim because the object is here. It's there already. It's in his possession. So since he never has to go to Beit Din to enforce it or to get it, therefore we don't worry about what Beit Din is going to say because it's in my actual possession now. There's a different form of Kinyan. One day Kinyan, I call it Kinyan Sugar, in a sense, Kinyan Chalipin, whereas the other one is a Kinyan Chatzer. By Kinyan Chatzer, we don't worry about enforceability and Beit Din because the object is now in my possession. When it comes to the Kinyan Sugar, the Kinyan is being created by a separate Kinyan, which is his picking of the Teina. That picking of the Teina, right, is something that creates a case of Kinyan Sudar, Kinyan Chalipin, and that's what generates the other's ability to take the Gneva. The other case where it's thrown into the Chatzer, the ability to take the Gneva is because it's in his possession now, it's in his Chatzer. So he just, you know, there, I can take it, I can do what I want with it. Whereas the Kinyan by the Kinyan Chalipin, right, is a problem of, I generated a Kinyan by having another Kinyan take place. But that other Kinyan didn't work because it was a chalipin shop. If that Kinyan doesn't work, how do I get possession of the other item? How do I ever get to the other item? So it deals with this a little bit. How does Kinyan chalipin work over here? What exactly is the case? If you look at Tosfos, your armor cuts the tainus and it's over hechi dami. What is the case here? Either time of gneiva b'chaser shalei keach b'shat akita. If the buyer, the gneiva is already in the possession of the buyer when he's coming today, my pari chalav. What's the case here? Right, then it'll be the exact same case as Rapapa. I mean, if it's already in Chatzer, then you have the exact same case that you have by Rapapa, and it should work. Who cares about being Tovea Bidin? It's already in his possession. The Chatzer was Kone, independent of the Kenyan Chalipin. What's the case? It's not in his Chatzer. Then, Dalchiyub Shabbos Mihacha Lab Mechirahi. Without the Chiyub Shabbos, right, then it's not mechira. The hakaim belongs to Rav Nachman. The peros of the chalipin. Who cares about whether it's chayim and shabbos or not chayim and shabbos? That's not the problem here. The problem is that you're doing a kinyan chalipin on peros. Right, you can't do a kinyan chalipin on peros. You can't do a kinyan chalipin on metalkalim like that. How are you doing a kinyan chalipin over here? Me the peros Rabbeinu Tam. If you remember, we did this gemara together. The Rabbeinu Tam had a different view of what kinyan chalipin peros means. Necha de Farish Da, the Peir Lo Avdei Chalipin, means Haina Betorah Kinyan Sudar. Right, that's in a case of Kinyan Sudar, the Machzir Lo Asudar. That's in a case, you can't do a Kinyan Sudar where I take a representative object to do the Kinyan Chalipin, and then I give you your handkerchief back. I take the handkerchief as a Kinyan, and that makes the exchange, like we do by Chamech, when we do Mechir Chamech, I take the handkerchief, right, there it says, take my pen and make a Kinyan Sudar over here, and then I hand them the pen back afterwards. That, Rabbeinu Tam says, doesn't work by Peiret. But if you actually do, where it's really an exchange, a real exchange where I'm going to keep one object, you're going to keep the other object, that kinyan chalipin does work. Shavu b'shavu toward zemin klai. That works according to Rabbeinu Tam. But according to the others, who say there is no kinyan chalipin at all by Peros, what are you going to say? But Marie, the ha'achalo dayik el lashon mecher. Marie is after the word of mecher. The afidu koi b'chazer lokeach. Given the Lomar Zil Shlim into Mechira Matana. In that Eno Chanami, you're right. If it remains in his Chatzer and he's Koneh, he would be Koneh in his Chatzer. But the problem is that's not called Mechira. That's not a Mecher. It doesn't come into his possession because he bought it. It comes into his possession because it's in his Chatzer. He's Koneh. It's as if he gave him a gift. Right? Because the other Kinyan doesn't work because the Kinyan of Shabbos doesn't work. But it's in his possession to say he's Koneh. It's koneh b'tzad matana and b'tzad that he gave it to him. He didn't say to him, Zil Shlim, come and pay for it. Right? If he doesn't say that, then there's no kinyan mechira. So that's what the Gemara after here is that our Mishnah says, and the Brises say, that he was goneh u'mocher. Right? So how do I come up with the case of goneh u'mocher if there's no kinyan here? There's no mechira. Kinyan mechira over here is a kinyan matana. That's different than a kinyan mechira. Even though you would be chayev arba chamisha by a matana. If you give it away, right, not only if you're mocher, if you give it away as a matana, you also be chayav arba chamisha. So that, but nevertheless, that's not what the Gemara is after. The Gemara is after the Lashona Mishnah says Mecher. And also, now you had it written by Tana, you could have come up with a case and it would have worked. Fine, I said. But the Mishnah and the Brisa specifically say Mecher. I want a case of Mecher. So how do I come up with a case of Mecher? This is not a case of Mecher. If it's in my chaser, and I'm calling it because it's in my chaser, that's not because I was Mocher it, it's because it's as if he gifted it to me, because it's now in my chaser. I was calling it because it's found in my chaser. Again, that will solve Steve's problem, which Joel was saying before, that the difference in the cases here is how the kinyan is, right, established. The kinyan is established because it's in my chaser. In that case, we say, full kinyan, we don't worry about the chilul Shabbos over here. Whereas if the kinyan is generated because of the chilul Shabbos, and that's the only way I have it, because it's not in my possession, there we're going to say that the failure of the kinyan, the failure of, a, or the inability to take him to court to enforce this kinyan also makes it a failure in the kinyan in general. Alright, so let's stop over here.